Solo Malzahn here on a PM Team Friday, a freaky Friday, and a first on a Friday. Wait a minute, what the hell? I was looking at my YouTube screen, which is way behind, and had Gentile's face still on it. And then I got really confused.
Sometimes if you don't have the tab open, you go back.
I know, but I got shocked. I was like, how did Sean get back in here? Is he kicking Cabali out? Mark Cabali is on. He did jump in early, technically, without any real way of knowing that we were having a video guest right before him. But now
he's
on.
I can also kind of take blame here because I put out the tweet.
Take blame? That was the best thing that's happened so far today. It was funny.
I put in the tweet 2:45, and I thought we'd be good because
then I can take the blame because I was going long.
Gentile was a little shorter than what
it was. Just put the blame on me. I'm the host, for God's sake. Just say, Malzahn, you ran a little long. You know who loved it, though? Content Craig, baby.
He was in here when it happened.
Oh, I know. He was in his glory. Content Craig couldn't get enough of it. He was like giggling while he said, okay, cut it off now if it's been twice. Anyway, Mark, hi, how are you?
The question is, Content Craig, would you spell it with a K, content?
Yeah, I mean, in that particular case, I think you can get away with Content Craig for sure. Like the click in wrestling, the K-L-I-Q.
I jumped on and I just hear screaming and yelling and I thought something happening in the studio.
No, we were howling though because that is something that in the history of this video feed has never happened. Speaking of wrestling, Donnie and I had a classic on Fully Loaded 1999 in the back today. Is there a dumber trope in pro wrestling? And I get it, Mark, you don't have to hit me with the, well, it's all theater, Malzahn, come on. But some of it is more believable than others. Like, we saw Shane McMahon get hit with an absolutely vile chair shot by Austin, like one that clearly hurt and probably concussed him. But they had The Undertaker in this first blood match get tied in the ropes, and Jim Ross goes, oh no, there he goes, he's stuck in the ropes. I hate it because they bill him as a 7-foot undead 300-pound monster, but somehow getting his arms crisscrossed in the ropes, he's just powerless for 5 minutes? What are we doing here?
It's sort of like on Raw, I think it was Monday, when CM Punk went through a table and was knocked out for 14 minutes while Cena was dropping his pipe bomb version 2. That must have been a massive table he went through.
Yeah, the Spanish table and the French table. There were two languages broadcasting.
By the way, big show Monday, Malzahn. Big show.
What is it?
PPG, SmackDown, and Raw.
Oh, yeah, the mega show. Donnie's going to that, I think. He's very excited. You're working middays that day, right? You're hosting, Donnie?
Yes.
Oh, he's
and
so
I am going.
He is so pumped that certain things worked out on the golf front at this station because now he gets to get out early and get to that mega show, Cabali. I'm gonna play this, though, for you, Mark, to start on the Steelers side of things here. James Palmer, Bleacher Report, doing like his YouTube sort of NFL kind of wire show. This is what he had to say about TJ Watt.
I'm hearing there's a chance Watt gets past 40, which is something that we're really keeping an eye on, right? That if he gets that $40 million a year at the age that he is at, he has every right to ask for it. I've talked on here a lot about the comparisons between him and Myles Garrett. The numbers are almost identical in every aspect in terms of superlatives and in terms of numbers, and they came in the same draft class. I mean, he has the right to try to get that. We'll see.
Mark, you know how the sausage gets made. That one certainly sounds like it's coming from TJ Watt's camp via James Palmer, no?
Yeah, could be. Could be him just speculating by, like he said, the numbers that are pretty much equal except for the age. But I don't know. I mean, we haven't heard really much of anything, of course, from either side, maybe a little bit here and there. But I don't think that $40 million is important as maybe some people may think it is. To me, if I'm TJ Watt, I'm more worried about guaranteed money through 2 years, right? I mean, they did it last time. He was much younger last time, but to guarantee him 2 years, then be able to move out or renegotiate or whatever after that second year is what I would be more worried about than having $40 million in $1, right? I mean, as soon as you sign that $40 million contract, it might be, it might be later in the season. Or it might be next year, you're going to get surpassed. You're not going to be number one again. So I think the guaranteed money might be the thing that, and the years associated with the guaranteed money would be more important than the actual bottom line dollar.
You said something there, though, that has me a little bit interested in kind of passing. You said renegotiate after 2 years. You don't think that it's pretty much cut and dry that this will be the last contract extension he signs with the team?
I think it might be the last multi-year deal. Multi-year, maybe they'll continue to add on to it. Very Hayward-like, right? He had a three-year deal, what, last year? But it was pretty much you can get out from under each of the next 3 years. Then you add another one. Then you add another one, depending on if you want to keep him. I don't know if TJ would want to do that and where he would be at his career right now. But, you know, somebody like Hayward, after next year, if he still wants to play, you don't wait till he goes to free agent. You just add a year on to it. So I can imagine something like that. I don't know. I'm not even saying renegotiate. I'm saying make sure those 2 years are guaranteed in your pocket for TJ. Then that third year, then if you need to, you can get out from under, you know, injury, whatever. So I think that's more of a likelihood than anything else.
Are you a little surprised? I mean, I know that it just happens to be that the Browns are the team that has the other elite edge rusher who they just gave this big money extension to, but it feels a little un-Steeler-like, sounds so hokey, and I don't want to put it in those terms, but it kind of makes me roll my eyes that at least part of this discussion is, will the Steelers kowtow to the player here like the Cleveland Browns did there? And I just think to myself, back in the day, we would have said, oh, the Browns did this, that was the move they made, yeah, we're not doing that. And yet, like, it seems like at least the Steelers are going to consider giving him a deal that's very close to a deal that I don't necessarily know will age well in Cleveland for Myles Garrett.
Yeah, I mean, what the Steelers do is maybe they'll overpay for a guy like TJ, but it's not going to be a lot. They know what the market value is going to be this year, and they know the market value was going to be next year is probably going to be higher. I don't know what you think about this, Malzy, but if I'm TJ Watt, I have absolutely zero interest in signing a deal until about September 7th. I mean, you're going to hold in regardless, right? You're not going to participate in training camp preseason. If it is, it's minimal. You've showed in the past you can deal with that. Then you wait till the end and wait till, you know, some of the other guys get their money. Maybe Micah Parsons does blow it out of the water and say, okay, my number has changed a little bit. I don't see why TJ would be in any sort of rush right now to sign this out until the absolute, you know, 23rd.
Well, I can think of one reason. I mean, I don't think that my brain would work on this like an elite player's brain would, but he's still going to work out on his own during this hold-in. He's still going to do all these drills. Do you want to risk potentially the off chance, and it's a slight chance, that you tear something while you're working out, you tear a labrum, or you just have a major injury, and suddenly, whoa, this extension's off the table, you're playing out, you know, that's it, man. We'll figure out what we do with you after this coming year, because you're going to miss 8 months or something like that. That would at least be in my brain if I were him.
I'm sure there's some sort of insurance policies that a guy can get, right? The Lloyd's of London, I don't even know if that still exists.
Lloyd's of London still exists.
I don't know. I heard that's pretty hard to get paid out of it, though. But it'd be maybe different if a guy wasn't already paid. This guy was already paid a ton of money. So maybe you're willing to take that chance because of that. What was that? Maybe a decade ago, Willie Colon tore the Achilles, I believe, in, you know, OTAs. I mean, I don't think that really affected. It's a different level type of guy. But I understand that things can happen by just, you know, working out. But I don't think that would concern him very much because his bank account's already pretty
healthy. Yeah. No, this is a legacy thing. Are they going to move him around a lot more, you think, this year? I mean, they've talked a big game about it. You say let's hope. Okay, so there's what they've said already and alluded to that they need to do versus what you actually think they're going to do. And you've covered this team a long time, so you know how stubborn they can be about the way they do things. Do you feel like they've seen, like, seeing him get bottled up by Rosengarten, not exactly getting bottled up by Jonathan Ogden or somebody like that in the playoffs, enough to see, like, okay, like, yeah, we might need to do some things a little bit differently with this guy?
When you said Rosengarten, I was thinking Henry.
Rowan Gardner, yeah. Rowan. Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean, though. It's like a draft pick and a rookie who just completely takes him out of the game by himself on certain plays, too.
You know, you can be the best player in the league, but if you're sitting up over, you know, the right tackle every single play, you know where you're at, right? I mean, you can scheme to take him out. I don't really – I mean, I think Highsmith is good. I think Herbig is also very good, but they're still not on the level of T.J. Watt. So to say, okay, we'll take T.J. Watt out of the game and let's have Highsmith or one of these other guys create the havoc is just short-sighted. I mean, you have to move him around. Just look what Myles Garrett does. I mean, you can see him in a number of different positions, and I know they want to do it, But like you said, they've wanted to do a lot of things in the past before, until you get to the game time and you see that 99% of the snaps are on the same side. So
is that going
to
be a Tomlin call if they do it, or Terrell Austin, by the way, if they do it?
It'd probably be Tomlin. I don't know. Those guys do get in a room and come up with a plan. It's not like Tomlin's making calls day of the game. That stuff is done prior to the games. So maybe you think you have a better matchup, but you have to be able to move him around a little bit to free him up, because you can't keep getting the chips. You can't keep getting the double teams. You can't keep just running away from him and think he's going to be able to produce. It's amazing to think about it, to see what he produced while, you know, basically just by talent and athletic ability, really.
You were saying you were a proponent of what, though, before I wanted to jump in with that last part there?
I totally forget.
Fair enough.
I'm old here, Mosey. I'm very old, Mosey.
Listen, man, that's why I felt a little bit guilty about derailing the train of thought, because I knew it might never pull back into the station.
Yeah.
The kids today
don't
understand.
It'll come back to me in about 5 minutes.
Well, that's
about five
fine.
Minutes, it'll come back to me.
I'll tell you what, you can turn about his fair play in 5 minutes when it comes back to you. Just keep it in your brain and then interrupt me and say whatever you were going to say. It'll be a total non sequitur. It'll be absolutely perfect. Friday fun day here on the PM team. Chris Muller solo. Pony, he's jinxing things now, Donnie. I was a little suspicious about your take at first. Maybe he just wanted to be nice and try to give away some Skeens jerseys. Now he's just full-on reverse jinxing this because he wants the Mets to win. Tweeting out that Keller's going to get a dub tonight. Shameful. And honestly, man, he's off his game. He's vacation troll Pony right now. It's just there's nothing even convincing about. I couldn't even muster like a mean response other than, okay, you got it, bud.
And next he'll say that O'Neal Cruz will hit 3 home runs tonight.
Yeah, it's just his heart's not in it. Fan Hotline is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. That is technically where we find Mark Caballi. Pat McAfee shows Mark Caballi. You got shouted out in the Aaron Rodgers interview. I watched every minute of it. I think it was 41 minutes, Mark, but they made sure they were getting some Caballi references in there.
Really? Yeah. I saw one of them. I wasn't really listening too much.
Well, he did say. Well, I'm gonna surprise you, maybe. Although I don't know where you stood or thought I stood on how Rodgers is going to do this year. I actually came away from that interview, the handful of quotes that were related to football, feeling better about how this is going to go with him than I did going into the interview. Because I think the main takeaway is, you know what, this is like a hokey thing, and this is definitely something that is cliche and corny. He absolutely seems like more of an authentic teammate than specifically Russell Wilson did last year. When he talks about, like, hey, he did the whole rundown of every skill player on the team, and he's laughing about not knowing all the names and trying to get some nameplates on the back so he can commit them to memory. It does come off like a more authentic guy who really does say, hey, this is my swan song, and I want it to go well, and I'm going to be committed to it going well. And I didn't always get the feeling of that kind of authenticity at all from Russ.
Yeah. I mean, he to me, he didn't seem phony, right? I mean, I liked Russ. He was a nice guy, but, you know, he came off as – you know, the world could be ending in 6 minutes, and he'd be like, that's okay. We at least got 5 more minutes, you know. So he came off his phone. He didn't come off.
Guys, let's
his
make the most of
it.
Let's win these 5 minutes, guys. There's an asteroid coming in minute 6. Let's win this. Win the 5, Cam. Win the 5.
Yeah. So I think he was sincere about everything, too. And if he wasn't sincere, he's one doggone good liar, man. I don't think there was any PR points. I don't think he went in there with an outline or anything. He was just telling you what he thought, and what he believed, and what his goals were. And it was hard to find anything that was, you know, even a little bit, you know, goofy, so to speak. Something you can just grab onto and say, "Oh, I can't believe he said that." I know he won, like you said, he won that part of it. But there's still a huge part left. I mean, how well can you play, right? That's going to determine everything. But at least right now, he does seem – and I saw it right away. I mean, I've never met him before. Just seeing him and interacting and how he was going about his business, he didn't look like a 20-year veteran diva to me. He just looked like a normal guy that wanted to play. And that's why I always like to make determinations by – just talking to the person, interacting, see what he does rather than go off of what you read or what you hear about him.
What I was going to say, though, about him that I felt like bad because I had done a little bit of it, but I had already walked it back even before he had gotten signed, was you would hear these things about him being a nightmare teammate. And there, Mike Williams, that definitely was a blow up. Garrett Wilson, it never worked out there. But the majority of the teammates, including Jordan Love, talked about him in pretty glowing terms, that he was a legitimately really good teammate. He's just one of the guys. And I mean, I don't think you said you liked Russ and people didn't necessarily dislike Russ, but I don't think Russ was able to connect with those guys. And here's the other thing, and this is where I really, when I started turning the wheels on what Rodgers said about this being his last year, this is where I started generating optimism from Mark, so I wanted to bounce this off you. Russ, I think, came here last year expecting that if he played well, somebody was going to give him like a 3-year, $100-plus million deal. Like, he could play his way into one more 9-figure contract. And we know that Let Russ Cook was basically, let me improv when I want to improv, and I'll do big things for you. And we know that after that Bengals game, when he did do a little bit of improv, it seemed like all the friction really started. I just get the sense that Rodgers' resume is better enough compared to Wilson's that Tomlin might be a little more deferential and say, hey, like, you're a 4-time MVP. I'm going to let you do what you want to do a little bit more. And that Rodgers also probably wants to win on script more, such that I think that this could actually work out a lot better, because I think he's still a better player than Russ. And I think he wants to actually stand there if the line protects him and run the offense that they're trying to run.
Yeah, I think a big difference is, I think Rodgers is that first ballot Hall of Famer, just dripping with talent. I think Russ had to work for a lot of stuff that he got. And I think knowing that, Tomlin might be able to let Aaron Rodgers, take some more of the chances with him, let him go about what he wants to do a little bit more, just a little. I mean, I'm not saying that he's going to take over the offense or anything. He's going to be in that room, and they're going to come up with a plan to be able to try to win games. But I just think the talent level is what might lead to them giving him a little bit more leeway in his ability to, for a lack of better words, just go out there and do what he wants to do. So, like you said, they pulled back on Russ after that Bengals game. I don't know exactly to what degree, obviously, but obviously he did something in that game that they did not like. I don't think if Aaron would do that, first of all, I don't think he would do that, but if he did, I think they would not react the same way.
Is their second leading receiver, so we all, like, specifically wide receiver, not tight end here, you can't say Freiermuth as a cop-out, is the guy who's going to be second in most of the major receiving stats for them already on their roster or still to be added to their roster right now?
Wow. I mean, you just look who's available, and it's not a great group.
Alan Lazard could be traded for.
See, maybe that was something was more possible before last week, but I can't see Aaron Rodgers going into Mike Tomlin's office and saying, I want Alan Lazard right now. It doesn't seem like he wants to rock the boat a little bit right there. And I don't know how much the Steelers would be interested in him. The other three big names that we've heard, Gabe Davis, if they liked him, they would have signed him already. So you can pretty much throw him out, right? Amari Cooper, I don't think anybody's heard from him.
Why are they not in? What's going on with him? I'm glad you brought him up, because we know what Rodgers likes, precision route runners and all that, guys who are detail-oriented. He is, in my opinion, among good to great wide receivers of the last couple of years. I think Cooper is more associated with good, like, elite-level route running than any of those guys. So why would you not want to at least kick the tires on a player like that? Did his legs fall off in the offseason?
You talking about Cooper?
Absolutely a technician at the position.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to tell because who knows what he wants. Maybe they did. I really haven't heard anything which way or the other. But you haven't heard Cooper's name associated with anything else. Might be visiting, might be interesting. He's pretty much gone off the grid right now, which makes you – wonder, is he just waiting until the end of camp? Is he banged up, or is he just don't want to play anymore? I mean, I don't know. As for Gabe Davis, we know that the knee wasn't very good, and they don't like to sign guys in free agency that have any sort of injuries I guess, for lack of better words.
They like drafting him, though.
Yeah, they like drafting him. But last year they had chances to grab people at the trade deadline, wide receivers, and they balked on it because they were a little bit banged up. One of them, Adam Thielen, just off the top of my head, who ended up turning into a pretty good receiver in the month of December. So as of right now, to answer your question, I would say Calvin Austin. I think Robert Woods is a good, you know, Van Jefferson, Allen Robinson, but knocked down the level to 3 or 4. Roman Wilson, he could be that guy. But, I mean, everything that Calvin Austin has done has him pointing in that upward trajectory. But I just hope they don't look at that and say, that's good enough. They need to go out and try to find somebody. And if you're going to find somebody at the end of training camp, Malzi, you might as well just forget about it, because nobody any good is going to come out of a cut in late August.
That's,
I mean, do you really want this guy?
That is that famed Kabali optimism that you are known for that put you on the map. But I actually agree with it in this particular case.
I mean, there's not too many Jericho Cotteries out there, right?
No. No, I agree with you. And I think it's going to – it's very obvious, even though Rodgers has not like a great history of consistently throwing to tight ends as like a major target in his passing game, it's clear that they're hoping that that trend is bucked with Freiermuth. And the way Freiermuth apparently was DMing Rodgers to recruit him to come here, he's trying to lay the groundwork for that very early on. So – a little impromptu power ranking for you right now. Before we do that, I want to remind you that you need to go check out the latest episode of Breaking Bread. It's brought to you by Saloni's Italian Bread. Donnie sat down with Pat Freiermuth. Muth. A man who has definitely, like, raised his public stature even more, filling in for George Pickens when George Pickens decided he didn't want to do his football camp later in July. Freiermuth's going to do that. He has been blowing up Aaron Rodgers' DMs, presumably to make sure Aaron Rodgers knows he's got a 6'5" tight end with great pass-catching skills that he could throw the ball to this year. Donnie and Pat Freiermuth had a very cool talk, and I actually might have something in the works with Pat Freiermuth as well in the coming weeks. So that's all available, 93.7 The Fan YouTube page, which is also where you can live stream the show, which many of you choose to do on a daily basis, which we appreciate. Mark Kabali finishing up here of the Pat McAfee Show. This impromptu power ranking is simple. This is silly season in sports talk radio. This is when everybody just goes, I'm going to throw something at the wall and see if it sticks. Donnie, do you even know, because I'm asking this genuinely, do you even know who did the first top five athletes to this point in the 21st century list? Did ESPN do it? Did somebody put that out there? Because everyone's doing top five stuff now.
I don't know who did that list. I saw last week when I was on vacation, Jeff put out like his Steelers since 2000 team. I think our buddy Benzi did it over at the Trib.
So like, everyone just decided at once. Everyone decided at once, like, this is what we're going to do here.
Yeah, people were like, well, we are a quarter century into this thing, so I guess we can do some lists.
How the sausage is made. All right, Kaboom, Mark Kabali. He has been given 4 minutes to prepare. I think that's an ample amount of time. In reverse order, Mark, so a little drama, please. 5-1, the five best Steelers since 2000.
Yeah, I got a couple honorable mentions, but I guess we'll save that for the end, right?
No. Give me the honorable mentions now. I don't like it when people do the honorable mentions after they get to number one. I want to hear who the honorable mentions are right now.
Honorable mention, Trent Jordan Watt, TJ Watt.
Wow, a surprise early, Don. I'm stunned. I just assumed, even without a playoff win as a member of the Steelers, that his individual greatness was going to get him on this list.
It is tough. Another one that's a Hall of Famer, the bus, Jerome Bettis, honorable mention.
How do you feel about that one, Dom?
So I don't have a problem with the Bettis one, because I feel like he was more of a late 90s.
His apex run was 96, 97. They had terrible offenses in 98 and 99, which not like entirely his fault. Cordell was kind of a mess at that point. But yeah, I don't mind Bettis being an honorable mention here.
This one really hurts me here.
Okay.
Honorable mention, Marquise Pouncey. I want to sneak him in the top five, but
I don't think that's wrong though. I don't think you're a hater if you say Pouncey doesn't make the top five. He wouldn't make my top five. He doesn't care now. He's you know, a wine salesman. He's moving wine all over the country. He's got his own winery that I think he admitted to us, Donnie, is like not that good. It's more that he does the old importing and exporting. He's like, oh, yeah, we make it in Sandusky or whatever. Anyway, all right, so those are your three honorable mentions.
All right, you want to go with number five then,
yes,
I guess.
Five down to one.
Number five, you can't have a top 25 team without number 86, Hines Ward. Even though he had some good years in the 90s, I guess late 90s.
He took off in 2001, I feel like.
Yeah. You know, he's had multiple coordinators, multiple quarterbacks too. So imagine if he was in the same offense forever too. So
do you know that nobody gave him a chance, by the way, to be great?
He has his hands cut out for him too.
What's that?
He had his hands cut out for him too, he said.
That's correct.
That was his famous...
He had in the 2000s, in the 12 seasons he played, he had 11,199 yards, 78 touchdowns, 924 catches. So almost the entirety of his career.
Big game player.
Very sure-handed.
Look at the playoff stats.
Very sure-handed.
Look at the playoff stats. Look at the playoff stats. Big game player. Super Bowl MVP.
He had a run in three consecutive playoff games, Donnie. Are you ready for this? Three Hines Ward playoff games in a row. 48 catches in these three games. Three playoff games. 48 catches, 8 touchdowns, and I think something on the order of 660 yards receiving.
Man, what were the three games? Those are absurd numbers.
I'm sorry, 8 games.
Okay.
Still absurd numbers. I was looking at something wrong. It was collective. They were Football Reference is being very dumb. You try to get
games. I was going to say that is an outstanding three games.
That's
200 yards.
No,
a game.
Shut up. That's a Football Reference error by Malzahn. He's playing the greatest games of all time when he's doing that. His playoff game log though. His run in three consecutive playoff runs: 8 touchdowns, 660 yards, and 48 catches in 02, 04, 05. Those playoff runs.
Yeah, I mean Which playoff game did he get dinged up in the second half for? It was one of the two.
Dinged up. I think he tore his ACL, right?
Did he tear his ACL?
He played in the Super Bowl anyways? He had to play in the Super Bowl anyways because he did some kind of crazy Aaron Rodgers type of
presumably
rehab?
That would have been what?
Was that the 2010 run? I feel like it was the 2010 run, but I might be – maybe I'm thinking 08.
All right,
They had to put Limus Sweet in and he dropped that touchdown.
So
then he fell over,
18 catches, 186 yards, 3 touchdowns in the 02 playoffs. He had big games in both. In the 04 playoffs, kind of not as fondly remembered because of how they ended, 15 catches, 214 yards, 2 touchdowns. And then in the run to Super Bowl 40, in those four games, Hines with 15 catches, 260 yards, 3 tutties. Pretty good numbers all the way around. All right, he's number 5 on the list. Kaboom, who's 4?
Number 4, Hall of Famer. Arguably the best offensive lineman in the history of the Pittsburgh Steelers, Alan Faneca.
Now, you know me. I'm very appreciative, and I knew you would because, you love to watch the big men play. I'm appreciative that you included him. You know me, though. I could put him even higher on this list because I think he is the best offensive lineman in my lifetime for the Steelers. I mean, the gold standard at guard, not just for this franchise, but you can easily make a case. How many guards in the history of the league, modern history of the league, are better? Like Steve Hutchinson gets put up there with him. Who else?
Randall McDaniel.
Okay. But my point is not very many, basically. No. What? Who's the guy in the Colts whose name? Quentin Nelson gets put up there now a lot, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
Ain't no Faneca, though.
No, I mean, Faneca, you don't need to explain it to me, and you don't need to explain it to Don. He's an interior lineman. We all get it. I could put him even higher, but I'm not going to quibble because you included
him. I actually
thought
Faneca was going to be higher.
I thought he might be like one or two. I thought he might be two. I thought he could get as high as two potentially, but I'll settle with 4. Who's 3?
People might disagree with the person here, but the ranking. Number 3, I'm going with Troy Polamalu.
given who's ahead of him and who I know has to be ahead of him here, I don't have a problem with it because I'm assuming I can name, I'm assuming the combined jersey number of the last two guys is 91 when you add them together. And I think incredibly enough, in one case, definitely, and probably the other case too, both better relative to their peers, probably, than Troy. Barely. If you're going by Good Citizen Award, though, Troy's number one when you factor all of it in.
Which brings us to number two.
Yeah. What a segue.
Although Antonio Brown might be like 1B or 1B minus, I don't think he's too far from the number one, but I'm going Antonio Brown number two. Just what a 6-year span he had, man. There ain't nobody close to those numbers that 6 years he had.
I still think when you take into account, so Jerry Rice overcame not having traditional speed for the position. Randy Moss obviously was just touched by God to play wide receiver in the NFL. You can, well, AB was listed at 5'10", I think like 190. How actually tall was he?
Yeah, he wasn't tall.
You've seen Troy Edwards up close. Running. Was Troy Edwards and was he similar size to Troy Edwards? Or was Troy Edwards listed at 5'8" and he's actually like 5'5.5"?
I think Troy Edwards was thicker than Antonio, if I recall back 20 some.
And also not very good at football.
Oh. I'm hearing you on that one. Here's the thing about that is Antonio is a guy that wasn't the best route runner, but he knew how to get open. And the number one guy and the number two guy, I don't know how good Antonio would have been with anybody else because Roethlisberger knew.
Well, Brady, he was pretty good with Brady because he kind of became Brady's de facto number one receiver in Tampa when he had his head screwed on straight.
Yeah, I mean, you know, everybody's number one has to be Big Ben, right? Big Ben is.
Do you actually want to know what?
Not, what can you say?
Well, yeah, most important position in the sport. If I'm weighing the importance of the position, he's number one. But if I try to, I always try to do these lists as relative to their peers. I might go AB Fanica 1-2 in some order, probably AB 1 as much as it pains me.
That's because you hate Ben.
I would not put Ben lower than 3. Why don't you relax, Kaboom? All right? I wouldn't put him lower than 3, and I'd
you
be
know
putting...
Ben's listening to this. On this podcast, he's going to say, some guys put me at number 3 on his list.
Do you, what percentage chance that this conversation gets back to him, or that he's actually maybe even listening right now, and I just get an absolute dart thrown my way the next time he and Spence get together? I think it's greater than 0. It might even be greater than 20%.
It's those soft tip darts where you're like, was that about me? I think that was about me.
Yes, and it's popular.
He's very good at that.
It's popular in this building to assume that if he says one of those, it absolutely is about me. All right. We asked Mark Cabali in the spirit of everyone's doing top five lists to rank his top five Steelers since 2000. Three honorable mentions: T.J. Watt, Jerome Bettis, Marquise Pouncey. Number 5, Hines Ward. Number 4, Alan Faneca. Number 3, Troy. Number 2, Mr. Big Chest. And number 1, the old cowboy, Mr. Benjamin Todd Roethlisberger. Kaboom, it's a solid list. I don't know if I agree with all of it. In fact, I know I don't agree with all of it, but it would be hard for anybody to say that you picked 5 of the wrong guys to populate that top 5.
Yeah, I mean, you could throw people like Farrier.
I was just going to say Potsy, I mean, could be in there.
Only Cam Hayward probably deserves to be mentioned in the, at least the honorable mention right now, right?
Does he?
He's probably in there. I think he should be.
I'm waiting for somebody to go, you guys don't know ball. Aaron Smith, for sure. He's so underrated.
Kimo Von Ohoff, and if he didn't break Carson Palmer's knee, they would never won that
Super
Bowl.
Very quickly, I actually am a believer in the idea that they were going to lose that game because Palmer was cooking, man. And I know
hey,
Kitna came in and cooked a little bit too early. Yeah, Kitna came in and looked like the bald Carson Palmer for a couple series there. Really quick, Mark. This will be more fun and off, completely off the cuff. The worst 5 Steelers of the 21st century since 2000. Just they have to have made the team, so it can't be like guys who got cut. Of guys who actually made Steelers rosters and played a little bit, the 5 worst Steelers you can think of.
Well, it would have to be guys that are drafted early.
Swede?
And Swede has to be in there because he comes to mind.
Yes,
right away.
He absolutely
Troy,
I mean, is.
Edwards
was drafted in 99. He was drafted in 99, but he played in the 2000s. You could do it if you want.
I want to throw other people in there like Jermaine Stephens and stuff like that, but he was in the early mid 90s.
Yeah. He wasn't he doesn't apply here.
Yeah.
Artie Burns? Jarvis?
I think intern Jack had a good submission here.
Who do you got?
Dante Moncrief.
Oh, I mean, he made a memorable impression on the city in his time.
How about
here?
Josh Scobie?
Oh, jeez, dude.
Garrett Hartley, Josh Scobie. There's a bunch of any punter you can probably think of, right?
Harvin.
I was going to say, our guy Harvin's very close at mine, but it might be the right call.
You know who what could be,
you know
too?
Who,
like
you
Sean
know what?
Mayhem.
You know whose giant fat Sean ass Mayhem. Belongs on this list? Kent Graham. Put Kent Graham on the list. He played one unbelievably forgettable partial season. I think Pony has described him as having had the largest ass of any player who's ever played professional football. I'm putting Kent Graham on the list. Sean Mahan, too.
Yeah, you know, Sean Mahan came in for Hardings, and he was going to keep up that legacy of centers, and it was like, yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Not good.
You traded for this guy?
Not good. All right, Kaboom, I appreciate you playing along with our game. Thank you.
All right, brothers.